Hare Krishna. Am I audible behind?
Just about. Okay. I'll speak a little loud. Is it better now? Okay, thank you. So several years ago, I was just going through airport and I saw some person reading a newspaper, and the headline was somebody's reading the sports page, and the headline was, "I knew God was on my side." So I wondered what it was. And I asked for the paper, and it was an Indian cricketer, I think, who is the person who retired recently, a very aggressive batsman, Sehwag. So he had scored a double century in a one-day match. He's among the few people who has scored a double century. And when he was around 150 or something, at that time he had hit a ball which had gone straight to a West Indies player. And that player was supposed to be a very good fielder. And that player dropped the catch. So Sehwag said, when he dropped the catch, I knew God was on my side. So now, at that time when I read that, I wrote an article about it, you know. Does God take sides in a cricket match? But the point is that even in a performance-driven sports like cricket, or any sports for that matter, sports players know that performance matters. They have to perform in order to win, in order to get results. But even they acknowledge that performance is not all that matters, that there is something beyond their control which shapes results. And many sports players have their own quirky superstitions by which they try to appease the unknown. So there's Australian batsman Mark Taylor. Before he would go out to bat, he would first go to the washrooms in the pavilion and make sure all the commode lids would be closed. And if he would get out early, he would not go to the pavilion, he would go to the commodes. And if any of the lids would be open, he would go and blast his team members. "Why did you keep that open?" "Because of that I got out." Now, we may say, what has the commode lid being open or closed got to do with your getting out? But the point is that they all know that there is something beyond us that determines results. And they try in their own way to try to appease that unknown. They think, you know, if I do it this way, maybe things will work out better. If I do it that way, things will work out better. So in many ways, sports offer us like a intensified and a dramatized microcosm of life. What happens in life, we see in sports in a more intensified, dramatized way. And in our life in general, also, we see that our efforts are important in determining results. But at the same time, our efforts alone don't determine the results. There is something beyond us, which sometimes works in our favor and sometimes works against us. Now, most often, we think of it, we note it, and we complain about it when it works against us. You know, I studied so well, but still I didn't get good marks. Well, many times I've given seminars in colleges. I ask students, if you're honest, there are times also when we don't study so much, and whatever little we study, that only comes in the exam. And I get good marks. So sometimes things work against us, sometimes things work for us. It's like, say, a person is swimming. And while swimming, sometimes the tide is in the same direction. Then they can swim faster, they requires less energy. Sometimes the tide is against them. And at that time, it requires greater energy, and they can't even swim that much because the tide is opposing them. So, like that, there is a tide in human affairs. And that tide sometimes works for us, sometimes works against us. And that tide, that higher force, which works sometimes for and sometimes against, that is referred to by different names in different traditions. In the Western tradition, it is called as predestination. In the Islamic tradition, it is called as kismat. In the Vedic tradition, it is referred to by the word daiva. So whatever it is, whatever the name, the point is that there is something beyond our control which shapes the results. And the modern mindset, increasingly the postmodern mindset also, the modern mindset was to try to take control of that which is not in our control. So, for example, in the past, say when there were no spectacles, then at that time, if a person started losing their vision, then at that time, they just lost it. So anatomy was destiny. If the anatomical capacity of the eyes goes down, then you can't see anymore. But when spectacles were developed, then they found that actually anatomy is not destiny. The eyes may lose their power, but we can regain our vision by some means. So the idea was that, okay, just acknowledge that there are some things beyond our control, but we can change that. We can take control of that which is not in our control. That which is earlier not in our control, we can take control of that. And in fact, much of the British imperialism by which Britain conquered most of the world, it was actuated by this Protestant idea that, you know, that God has blessed us, and by his blessing, we can control everything. So it was not atheistic, this idea of controlling. So there are many of the pioneering scientists, they were Christians, and their idea was that what Jesus has done in the spiritual realm, science will do in the material realm. And just as Jesus has delivered us spiritually, science will deliver us materially. So they saw science as a blessing of God to overcome the sufferings that come upon us because of factors beyond our control. Now, traditionally, nature was thought of as the mother and God was thought of as the father. But as the attempts to control nature started taking more and more prominence in the human psyche, the role of nature... There are thinkers in, especially Britain, in the 17th century, just when science was gaining more steam. At that time, they started saying that nature is actually not like a mother. She's like a stepmother. There is a Cinderella narrative. Stepmothers are so cruel. So like that, nature is cruel. And rather than submitting to her, we have to break free from her control. And the tool to break free from her control is science, especially technology. And as things went further, there are some thinkers who also went to the extent saying nature is not even a stepmother. Nature is like a whore. And unless she is controlled, she will destroy us. So the attempt was to bring things which are conventionally, traditionally considered not in our control, into our control. And the ethos was, the underlying ethos was, that actually we can control everything. We can determine our future. The future is in our hands. Whatever we want, we will do it. We will achieve it. And this idea is not uncommon. In the Vedic tradition, there are two broad schools of thought. There is Karmavad and there is Daivavad. Karmavad is the idea that our karma, whatever actions we do, they determine the results. So if you work hard, you will be successful. And Daivavad is the other extreme, that actually results are destined. Things are not in our hands. So therefore, now the Western or the Anglican, the Britishers, their criticism of India was that Indians are fatalistic. Fatalism is the ideology which says that the belief system which accepts that everything is destined. Nothing is in our control. And they said their ideology was that the reason why, say, the Britishers accused Indians of being fatalistic is
they said that you Indians don't take initiative. That's why whenever foreigners came and conquered, they allowed themselves to be conquered. They said the kind of poverty, kind of difficulty that was there in India, says if Western people had to subject to that, they would rebel against it. This is the revolutions in France. There was never a revolution of that kind, violent uprising in India. Said because Indians are, you know, they're cultured, conditioned to be passive. That they're fatalistic. They believe that everything is destroyed. So if the Muslims conquered us, that was our destiny. The British conquered us, that was our destiny. Now, this is actually a caricature. If we look back at the self-understanding of the Vedic literature, especially the bhakti texts. The bhakti texts accept the existence of God. At the same time, they don't say that everything is predestined. That, let's look at this from the logical perspective, and then let's look at it from the narrative perspective. Srila Baldev Vidya Bhushan, in his Govinda Bhashya commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, analyzes this. And he says that if everything were destined, then scripture, which gives us directions, do this and don't do this, that scripture would become meaningless. When scripture says you do this and you don't do this, that means we have the freedom to choose. If everything were destined, then we had no freedom to choose. Then what is the point of scripture telling us to do something and not to do something? So, from the very fact that scripture contains directions, a point is that we have the capacity to choose. Let's look now at some incidents in the Ramayana. In the Ramayana, there is a dialogue which echoes these modern concerns about fatalism. When Ram is exiled in the forest, at that time, he accepts it stoically. But his younger brother Lakshman is furious. He says, you know, how can you, there is no fault on your part. You have been a virtuous person. You have been an obedient son. You are loved by the citizens. Why should you go to the forest for no fault of yours? Absolutely no fault on your part. Why should you go to the forest? So, when this question comes up, at that time, Ram says that actually, it is the King Dashrath's, my father's instruction. And because it is his instruction, if you'd like to come here, you can come here. In case some other devotees also come more. So, he says that it is my father's instruction, I had to follow it. And he says, and don't blame our father. He says, it is not that he wants to do it, he's obliged to do it. So, he says he has given his word to Kaikeyi, because of which he's obliged. And he says, you know, but, he says, I never heard of any vow like Dashrath had given that I'll follow, that he had given to Kaikeyi. I think this whole thing is a concoction. It's just imagine to, it's a conspiracy to exile. He says, no, when I went there, I saw how afflicted Dashrath was. And I saw that it was Kaikeyi who was forcing him to do something which he did not want to do. He says, and Lakshman now directs his anger towards Kaikeyi. He says, you know, how can she ever ask you to do such a thing? Now, where have you done any harm to her? He says, yes, Lakshman. He says, you remember how much Kaikeyi loved me? He says, her love for me was like the flow of the Ganga. So Lakshman's anger is now joined with his intelligence. He says, that's what I can't understand. How did the Ganga dry up in one night? Where did her love go? So then Ram says that actually that's why. When I heard her speaking those harsh words, I understood that it is destiny speaking through her. It is the will of destiny that I should go to the forest. Lakshman is still furious. He says, only cowards accept injustice as destiny. Heroes fight against injustice. So you should fight against it. And if you don't want to fight, I will fight for you. Whoever stops your enthronement, they will meet death at my arrows. So Ram says, I am not concerned. I am not going to the forest because it is destiny. I am going to the forest because it is my duty. And Kaikeyi's total change of heart has what convinced me that this is the duty that I should follow. That is what is destiny's will for me. At one level, this can be seen as, is Ram being fatalistic? I was being exiled. Let me be exiled. It's the will of destiny. Now, if Ram had just believed in that everything is the stand and everything has to be passively accepted, then later on, when Sita is abducted by Ravana, Ram would have said, Sita's abduction is also the will of destiny. Let me accept it. I lost Sita by destiny's will. He did not accept it that time. Why? Because Ram was not destiny centered. He was duty centered. That he's saying, what is my duty? My duty is to obey my father. If my father wants me to become the king, I'll become the king. If my father wants me to go to the forest, I'll go to the forest. Normally, he would have become the king. But when there is such a sudden, terrible change of circumstances, he said, okay, that I realized by the harsh demeanor of Kaikeyi that changing her heart was not possible. Therefore, I accept that. So it is not passive acceptance of destiny because of which Ram went to the forest. He was simply doing his duty. And he felt that the best way to his duty was at that time to go to the forest. His father was already mortified because of having to sentence him. And if he had rebelled, that would have increased the tension and the friction within the family all the more. So I'll come to this again a little later with some other incidents. But the point is that it is not true that the bhakti literature of ancient India, they are fatalistic. They do give a strong role to human initiative. At the same time, they also acknowledge that there are some things which are beyond our control. And then, human life is basically a dance of balance between karma and daiva. Between what we can do and what is in our control and what is beyond our control. That it's a dance of balance between the two. And we all need to learn when to accept things, when to change things. So now, it might appear as if, you know, why should I accept anything as unchangeable? I'll work and change it. It's this idea of karmavad, where things are in my control and I can change them. This is very appealing to the individual, to the modern mind. And it also seems to be empowering. Why should I accept anything passively? I will work and I'll change things. But this idea that everything is in my hands to change, it is not actually empowering. It can be seriously disempowering. How is that? Because on one side, it is very flattering, very exhilarating to think that I am the architect of my success. By the sweat of my brow, by the power of my brain, I attain success. But the flip side of that is that if I am the sole architect of my success, then I am the sole person to blame for my failure. And then when I fail, despite my best efforts, what it implies is that something is wrong with me. That somehow I am a messed up person. See, when we understand destiny's role in our life, then we understand that failure is an event in my life. I did my part, but still because of unfavorable destiny, the result didn't come. So
So failure is an event that happens in my life because at that time the destiny is unfavorable. But if I don't accept the role of destiny, then failure becomes not just an event, failure becomes a person. It's not that I failed, it becomes I am a failure. So it is the enormous amount of psychological problems that people have in today's world. It is largely because of this idea that I should be able to control everything. There's an author who wrote that he says, I went to a psychologist and he told me that I was depressed, neurotic, suicidal, and almost entirely normal. So, unfortunately, this is the condition today. And so many people are so mentally troubled. Now, mental troubles can have many different causes at a specific level. But underlying all those specific causes, we can see one generic common factor. That generic factor is the idea that I should be able to control everything. When I'm not able to control everything, then that unwillingness to accept reality, that is what causes our minds to malfunction. That's what causes psychological problems. When we can't accept reality, okay, this didn't work out. It's fine. It didn't work out. I'll do something else in my life. So the unwillingness to accept that sometimes things beyond me will shape results which may not be favorable to me. Srila Prabhupada, in a lecture, in a first canto purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says, there is nothing to regret when things are beyond human control. When things are beyond human control, you know, we have done our part. And if things don't work out, despite our doing up, you know, we are fully planned to go for an important meeting. At that time, a storm comes. Can't come out of our house also. There's nothing to regret at that time. Sometimes things are beyond human control. And unfortunately, in today's world, the idea is that actually we can control everything. It is. So this Karmavad, yes, on one side, Daivavad, the idea that nothing is in our control, if it is accepted, it can be disempowering. And many Christians, they use this as a tool. There's a South American tribe. It's a big tribe at that time. It was in the early 16th century. They were strongly against the Christian aggressors, the Catholics who were going to South America to convert. And at that time, one of their priests, they learned the local language and they started mixing with the people. And then they learned that among this tribe, they had a belief, or they had a notion that if on a full moon day at midnight, a single horse without any rider comes charging into our village, that indicates that in the next war that we will fight, we'll be defeated. So that was the belief they had. And as soon as they understood this, what this missionary pastor teacher did is, he went and told the Spanish army. And they arranged for exactly at that time for a horse to come. And the next day, this Spanish army, they came with a small army. And they could no way have fought with the local tribal people. But just seeing this army coming, the tribal surrendered. And either they were converted, and those who refused to convert, they were exterminated. So the idea that everything is destined, if this is given too much credence, then it can be damaging. And it has damaged many people. And there are many people in India also who have this conception that everything is destined. But actually, that is not the teaching of the scriptures. So now, one extreme, as I said, is to think that everything is destined, which is antithetical to our current ethos. But the other extreme, to think that everything is in my hands, that is also damaging. So we need a balanced understanding that there are some things in my control and some things which are not in my control.
So
before I go into a little more technical analysis, let's clarify some terms first. So there is karma, daiva and phala. So the word karma is one of the very most common words, which is not just used in discussion based on Vedic literature, but it's also acquired mainstream acceptance. But while the word is used very commonly, you know, it has multiple meanings which are often not understood. So here on top, I have talked about four meanings of the word karma. Karma can refer to action. In all this discussion, we are talking karma vad, means, you know, things are in our hands. If we act, the results will come. So karma can refer to action. But karma can also refer to reaction. Sometimes you say, we are suffering the results of our own, we are suffering our own karma. It's my own karma. It's your karma that you're suffering. There we use the word karma to refer to the reactions of our actions. And the word karma can also refer to the system of action and reaction. The law of karma is inescapable. So there what we are saying is that karma as a system of action reaction, it is universal, it is inexorable. So karma can refer to a system of action reaction. It can refer to action, it can refer to a reaction, it can refer to the system of action reaction. Beyond that, there is one narrower meaning of the word karma, where there are three kinds of actions. There is karma, there is vikarma, and there is akarma. So karma refers to good actions, pious actions, virtuous actions, actions which give good results. Vikarma refers to impious actions, bad actions, actions which give bad results. And akarma is spiritual action which does not give any reaction. I'll talk about that a little later. But, I talked about these four meanings of the word karma, primarily to underscore that we are going to, in our talk, we are going to refer to karma only primarily in the first sense. Karma we are using to refer to our actions. Now, what is daiva? What is destiny? The material world is governed by laws. And just like, say, we have Newton's law of motion. So Newton's laws are there. They're like that. These are the laws of physics, which basically govern the interaction of matter. So if I drop an object, it will fall down. That's a law. The law of gravity governs the interactions of matter. But like that, there are laws which govern the interaction of consciousness with matter. And those laws, because they involve conscious beings who have free will, they are non-mathematical laws. They are also laws, they're factual, but they're not literally, you cannot postulate them as mathematical equations. We can get some indication of them if we put it in some mathematical terms. Like I said, to every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. That's Newton's law. Sometimes we said, that is the law of karma. But it's not that simple. I'll talk about why. Karma is truth. For action, there is a reaction. But the reaction itself comes at multiple levels. Now, if I throw a ball at a wall, the ball bounces back. I could say that is the action and reaction. But in karma, the reaction is not that simple. Reaction can come in different ways at different levels. So essentially, when we talk about the reactions to our actions, there is a time lag. I do an action and I may not get the reaction immediately. And that sort of, English is called staggering. Staggering means that, you know, things are coming in phases. Do it one sometime, then after sometime later. So actually, this a time lag between action and reaction is what we see even in nature also. Now, if we sow crops, they grow in a few months. If we sow fruit seeds, they may take a few years to grow. Some trees may fructify after several decades. So the seeds will lead to fruits, but the time duration between the seeds and the fruits may vary. So every action that we do is like a seed that is sown. And the karma seed that we sow will give a reaction. But different reactions will come after different time durations. And even this is not so counterintuitive. In our experience also we see that, say, if a child puts hand in fire, the reaction is immediate. You get a burn heat and then there's a scar that comes on the hand. Now, if somebody, say, eats a dozen ice creams on a cold night, they might feel the taste is very good now. But 6 hours later or 8 hours later when they wake up, they'll have a sore throat. You know, somebody keeps habitually binging. It's very good. But, you know, a month later when they look on the weighing scale, they'll get, So, all that they have eaten, it's going to come. So, the action and reaction, the reaction may not be seen immediately. But the reactions come after some time. So now, during the intermediate period, the action has been done, the reaction has not yet come. So, the reaction, the sum total of the reactions that is stored, and the stored sum total of our reactions, which have not come upon us, that is called as destiny. So, destiny is the sum total of the actions which we have done, but whose reactions we have not yet got. That means destiny is not arbitrary. So, sometimes bad things happen to us. It's not that there is some God up there who is cruel, who wants to punish us, or there is who is partial and who favors some people and who is against some people. No. The destiny is the sum total of our own past actions. And that stockpile of karma, the results of those results which are accumulated, they come upon us at different times in our life. So here, if you can see this diagram, you know, this is like the central rectangle, that is like the karma tank. So that is the sum total of our karma. That could be called as a destiny. Another word that is used for this is, in Sanskrit, is sanchit karma. Sanchit means accumulated. All our karma that is accumulated together, that is called as sanchit karma. Now, if you consider, say, a water tank. Now, if it's a huge water tank, and from above, water is coming in, and from below, water is going out. Suppose somebody has put in dirty water in the past, and a lot of dirty water in the water tank. Now from above, clean water is coming in. Although clean water is coming in from above, from below when somebody opens the tap, the water that is going to come out is not so clean. It's dirty. That's simply because that was the water that was put there earlier. So the water that is going in, that is the karma that we are doing. That is presently the actions that we are doing. And the water that is coming out, that is the results that we are getting. So, that means, I said, the law of karma is not as simple as the Newton's law of motion, that every action produces a reaction. Why is that? Yes, the action produces a reaction, but what we get may not always be the reaction for that particular action. Say, I study, and then I get a certain number of marks in my exam. Now, do the marks which I get necessarily reflect the amount of study that I have done? It may not. So now see, the nature of life is that we all implicitly work with a cause-effect correlation. And the cause-effect correlation means, as I said, that if a family member comes back home and they've got a scar on their hand, what happened? That means, what happened means, we are asking, how did you get this scar? The scar will not come just by chance. So we implicitly, whenever we see an effect, we assume that it has to have a cause. So every cause produces an effect, and every effect has a cause. So we all operate with a normal cause-effect correlation assumption. And this assumption is vindicated by our day-to-day dealings. Now, if a person goes to a doctor and says, "Doctor, my stomach is upset," the first thing the doctor will ask is, "What did you eat last night?" isn't it? There's a normal correlation. Now, this cause-effect connection is fine as far as it goes. There's no denying that. Causes produce effects. But there are some times when, despite the cause not being present, the effect comes. Or despite the cause being present, the effect doesn't come. Like sometimes, somebody may just be eating very reasonable, normal food and still they get a stomach upset. There's no immediate cause present. And sometimes, some people, they eat as if their tongue is like a conveyor belt. Let's take everything inside. And still, nothing seems to happen to them. So, now, that means what has happened? Normally, we see that the kind of food we eat, that affects us. If I eat an unregulated, that causes stomach upset. So, that cause produces an effect. But sometimes, I see the effect even when the cause is not there. Or sometimes the cause is there, but the effect is not there. So now there are, when we encounter this, how do we make sense of it? One way would be to say that actually, everything happens by chance. There's no cause-effect correlation. But we never function like that. You know, the question of why do bad things happen to good people? That question is asked because when we see a linear correlation, if I do good, I get good. If I do bad, I get bad. But then suddenly I see, oh, I'm doing good, but I'm getting bad. So we do see a correlation between cause and effect. And that, it is that on that basis that we normally function. In fact, all of science is based on this assumption of correlation between cause and effect. If there would be no cause-effect correlation, then there would be no progress of science. In fact, actually, science itself is based on the assumption that there is a cause-effect correlation. When Newton saw the fruit falling, what made this fruit fall? He asked that question. But his very asking that question contains an assumption that things don't happen by chance. There must be something which made this happen. So when, say, a doctor sees, okay, you got this, your blood pressure has gone up. What has made this happen? So the whole idea is we function based on assumption of cause-effect correlation. And when we don't see a normal cause-effect correlation, at that time, we go deeper to find that there was some other factor in play. There must be some other factor in play. Say, for example, if the room is hot and I turn on air conditioning. After turning on the air conditioning, I expect that the temperature should rise or the temperature should cool. But if it is not cooling, then I have to look. Maybe somewhere some door is open, some window is open, because of which all the cool air is going out. So rather than dismissing the whole system of cause-effect correlation, when a cause does not produce the expected effect, what we do is, we look for some other factors that may be shaping the effect. But not that we reject the whole system of cause effect. So it is true that there are times in our life when we do good things and still we don't get good results. The nature of the human mind is to always focus on the things. When the things go right, we give credit to ourselves. And when things go wrong, we want to find someone else to blame. So that's why most people have this question, why do bad things happen to good people? Nobody asks the question, why do good things happen to bad people? Because we don't think that I am bad. I'm a good person, but so many bad things are happening to me. So what happens is it works both ways. Sometimes good things happen, sometimes bad things happen. And acknowledging that when I don't see a cause-effect correlation, there must be something deeper, which I am not understanding. That opens our mind to a deeper understanding. So essentially what is happening, we are doing some actions. So normally our actions produce reactions. But the action and the reaction correlation is not simply linear. This action will produce this reaction. That's how things normally work, but destiny also comes in the play. When destiny comes in the play, then the normal, that action may not produce that reaction. So like our digestion. Now we eat food, we digest food, we get energy. Normally, that's, we don't even think about it. The only time we think about our digestion is when it doesn't work. That's when we start thinking about it. Why is it not working? So when things don't work, that's when we notice them. But actually, it's the action effect, action reaction correlation is there, but there's something more going on over there. So the action that we do is called as the agami karma. And the results that we get, that we are presently getting, that's called prarabdha and aprarabdha. Prarabdha is what we have already got. The kind of body that we have got, the health of the body, the looks of the body, the family in which we are born, the wealth level of the family, the prestige of that family. Things which we get as our starting point in our life. That is the prarabdha karma. And the things which we get in the course of our life, which are going to happen to us in the course of our life, that is the aprarabdha karma. So, to give an example, to understand this once again, say that sometimes people hire cars. Here also people, in America, a lot of people hire cars. Here also people hire cars. They go to a particular place. So now, when we hire a car, say I want to go from London to Cambridge, and I hire a car. Now, once I have got a car, that car is the one which I am going to drive. And then when I am driving, there is a weather forecast. Okay, there is going to be a storm over here. Now the car which I have and the weather which I am going to get, that is fixed. But along with that, is how I am going to drive fixed? No. There might be stormy weather. It might be raining. It might be, the roads might be slippery. But I have the capacity to drive slowly, cautiously, or to drive fast and rashly. Now, if the weather is inclement, if the weather is hostile, if at that time I drive rashly, that will lead to an accident. But the accident itself is not destined. What is destined is that, okay, I'm going to get stormy weather. Or we hire a vehicle and the vehicle is not a very good vehicle. The vehicle which I have is fixed. The weather I'm going to get is fixed. But specifically how I drive, that is not fixed. There is something in my hand, something not in my hands. But this combination is what life is all about. So the body that we have got is like the car. Our body is the car which we have got. And that is fixed. Some of us may have a very good car, some of us have not so good car. That's fixed. We can't change it. We have certain looks, we have certain IQ level. We're born in a certain family, that's fixed, that's a starting point. And certain events in our life, certain periods in our life, certain good things are going to happen, some bad things are going to happen. But how we respond to them, that will determine how much worse they become or how little they affect us. And the weather is bad, at that time I'm driving rashly also, a much bigger trouble will come. But if the weather is bad, I'm driving reasonably well, safely, I won't face much problem. So, this way, the prarabdha karma is the body that we have got. The prarabdha is what we are going to get during the course of our life. That's fixed. But it's not that our whole life is fixed. We have the capacities to choose. And by choosing, we can make things, that some bad things will happen in our life. We can make those bad things worse. Or we can make those bad things less bad. Some good things are going to happen in our life. We can bring the best out of those good things, or we can just miss out on those good things. That is our free will. That is our agency. So I'll talk about this a little later. Let's complete this discussion and then we'll have a short break. So we have, this is like an equation which I explained. Ultimately, this reality is very subtle. We cannot put it down in mathematical equations. But the mathematical equations give us some indication. So karma plus daiva plus kala, that leads to phala. Karma is the action that we do. Daiva is the destiny. Kala is the passage of time. So karma, daiva and kala, they together lead to phala. So this means that a simple example, say in farming, when a farmer plows the land and sows the seed, that plowing and sowing is karma. The rains coming in time, That is Daiva. And then, from the sowing season to the harvesting season, time has to pass. That is Kala. And when Karma, Daiva and Kala, all three are there, then there is the phala, the harvest that grows. So sometimes the karma is not there. Sometimes the karma may be there, but the daiva may not be there. The farmer plows and sows, but rains don't come. Then the phala will not come. Mm-hmm. But if the daiva is favorable also, if the karma is not there, if the farmer has not sowed the seeds, you know, if rains come, what will happen is you just get weeds over there. So karma is important and daiva is also important. Like say, the Bhagavatam gives the examples. Sometimes a couple wants to have a child. They try, but sometimes they have children, sometimes they don't have a child. So their trying is karma. Then there is the will of destiny, daiva. And then even if the conception happens, still kala. It's not that immediately a child is going to be born. Time has to pass. So karma, daiva and kala, these three together the Purana describes. That is how phala comes in our life. So now, when we have done the karma, but the phala doesn't come, that is when we get very disturbed. But what the principle of destiny implies is that if I have done my karma and I have not got the phala, it implies two things. That means at that time, some unfavorable destiny is intervening. And that's why I'm not getting the phala. But that does not mean that my karma has gone waste. Because my karma is going into the accused stockpile of the total Sanchit karma. So the good that we do, it never goes in vain. Even if it does not produce a good result immediately, still what has happened? That good is going to contribute to our positive karmic destiny. And eventually, it will produce the result. So in this way, if we understand karma properly, then we will understand that actually the karma and daiva properly, then we will always be inspired to do our duty, do our karma. Because Ram was duty-centered. Do your karma, the results will come. Even if the results don't come now, they are going to the karmic stockpile and eventually the results will come. So, the principle for understanding that, the purpose of understanding destiny is not to just think that nothing is in my control and become fatalistic. It is to become duty-centered, to focus on doing that which we are meant to do. By being duty-centered, we can get the results if destiny is favorable, and we can contribute to future results if the destiny is presently not favorable. In that way, by being duty-centered is always auspicious. So I'll summarize and then we'll have a short break. So I talked today about how even a performance-centered field like sports players understand that there's something beyond our control. So somebody might call it God, somebody might call it fate, people may have their own superstitions. I mean, they try to appease the unknown to get the results. So in sports, performance matters, but performance is not all that matters. And what applies to sports, that is like an intensified, dramatized microcosm of life. That applies in life also. So the modern ethos is karma-centered. You work, you get the results. And science and technology, it's appeared as if they have brought things which were previously not in our control, in our control. And that's how it may seem that now we can control everything. So previously we couldn't see if our vision went down. Now with eyes, with specs, we can see. But the notion that we can, yes, we might be able to control some more things than the past, but that doesn't mean that we can control everything. The notion that we can control everything seems empowering, but it is also disempowering. Because if I claim that I am responsible for my success, then I alone am responsible for my failure. Failure doesn't just remain an event, it becomes a person. And then that can be psychologically damaging. So a large part of the mental problems that people face today is because they have been brought up with the idea that you should be able to control and achieve. And if you're not able to control and achieve, there's something wrong with you. And they're just not able to accept that. So karmavad, it can be psychologically damaging. Similarly, the other extreme is daivavad, that everything is destined. That is also disempowering. I talked about how the the South American tribe just accepted defeat because of their fatalistic belief about certain signs being a precursor of defeat. So now there may be some people in modern India who might be fatalistic, but if you go back to the Bhakti text, they are not fatalistic. Ram accepted Kaikeyi's the sentence of going to the forest, not because it was destiny, but because he felt that was the best way he could do his duty to his father. And if he had been destiny centered, then he would have just let Ravana abduct Sita also. But he fought to get Sita back, because as a husband, he considered his duty to protect his wife. So the how do we understand this concept of duty centeredness in a more philosophical sense? We discussed about how the word karma has different meanings: action, reaction, system of action, reaction, and good action. And we focus on karma primarily as good as action in this discussion. So normally, action produces a result. This cause-effect correlation is the basis of our day-to-day functioning. It is the basis of science. But when a cause doesn't seem to produce an effect, or an effect comes in the absence of a cause, then rather than questioning the whole system of cause and effect correlation, you have to see if there are any other factors involved. Like if AC is not cooling, then is some window open because of which the AC is going on? So if karma is not producing phala, what does it mean? Something else is involved over there. That something else is daiva. So destiny is basically the sum total of our actions, whose reactions have not yet come to us. And that sum total comes to us at different times throughout our life. The actions that we do, they contribute to this positive side of the stockpile of karma. The bad actions that we do, they contribute to the negative stockpile. The reactions that we get, they are called as prarabdha and aprarabdha. Prarabdha is what already got in the course of our life. Aprarabdha is what we will get in the course of our life as we move forwards. And just as a farmer has to sow and plow, that is karma. The rains come, that daiva, and the passage of time is there. And the harvesting season, the phala comes. Like that, in our life, we do our duty. And the destiny is favorable, the results come. But when the results come, we don't think about destiny at all. We think, I worked, I got the result. And when the results don't come, then what has happened? We start questioning. But the daiva always is present. And when when our karma doesn't produce the phala, rather than getting frustrated, we accept that there is some unfavorable daiva. But my work is not going in vain. My karma will contribute to a favorable daiva in future. So we'll have a 5-minute break, and then we can join and we'll continue afterwards. Thank you very much.